So imagine your town, right? It just washes away in this sudden flood. You probably think the government would just, wire the funds to get things moving.
Right, yeah, you definitely expect it to be this immediate thing.
Yeah. But today we're doing a deep dive into this incredibly specific source material. It's the National Department of Human Settlements Municipal Emergency Housing Form. And our mission for you today is to show how this, well, this really dry bureaucratic document is actually a high-stakes survival guide. It's all about rebuilding a community.
Exactly. And it's funny because it's kind of like a real-life SimCity manual, you know?
Oh, totally. Like, you can't just drop a new hospital on the map. The
No.
game forces you to first zone the land, lay the water pipes, check the budget.
Right, and this form forces real municipalities to do the exact same thing, but while the disaster is actively happening, which is, I mean, it's wild.
It really is.
What's fascinating here is that this paperwork reveals the hidden anatomy of disaster recovery.
Yeah, it maps that brutal journey from immediate chaos to permanent infrastructure.
Spot on. Before anyone even touches a bulldozer, the process demands this really stark accounting of the human toll.
Okay, let's unpack this because the paperwork doesn't just ask for like a casualty count or a quick damage estimate. It requires the exact GPS coordinates of the destruction.
Yeah, down to the exact spot.
And alongside that, a deeply detailed community profile. So
Yeah.
we're talking specific income levels and exact unemployment numbers for the affected families. And honestly, I'm struggling to see why a housing grant needs to know if a flood victim is currently unemployed.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, disaster response isn't just about replacing roofs.
Right.
It's about measuring vulnerability.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
So a disaster hits a settlement of, say, unemployed, undocumented workers very differently than it hits a fully insured suburban neighborhood.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Forcing mayors to lock down these demographics ensures the state deploys the correct safety nets. They have to notify the Provincial Disaster Management Center immediately.
I see. So it targets the populations who literally have nothing to fall back on.
Exactly.
Right. So you've mapped out exactly who is displaced and, how vulnerable they are. But knowing who they are doesn't actually put a roof over their head.
No, it definitely doesn't.
So how do you physically house 1,000 people when the ground is still smoking?
Well, this is why the very next step requires the municipality to untangle property rights. Like, was the affected area an informal settlement?
Right. Do they even have full ownership to begin with?
Exactly, because you can't start pouring concrete until you know who legally owns the dirt.
That is a massive hurdle.
Yeah, and once they secure community consent, they must guarantee immediate basic services. We're talking water, refuse, sewage removal.
Oh, wow.
And all this happens while the permanent engineering infrastructure is still being planned out.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. The application actually asks if the local government can train the affected people to erect their own temporary structures.
Yeah, it's pretty unique.
It's like extreme DIY camping, But it's legally binding and totally community driven.
It is. It's a massive logistical puzzle. But, you know, empowering the community doesn't mean it's just a free-for-all.
Right, there are still rules.
Exactly. Any sourced shelter materials must meet strict safety standards. They use the ones set by the National Bureau, known as the SABS.
So that basically ensures a temporary tin roof won't just like collapse in the next windstorm.
Right. It empowers people to rebuild their own lives, but it strictly enforces national building regulations at the same time.
Okay, so I'm looking at the back end of these logistical requirements, right? The demand for strict cash flow projections, proof of managerial capacity, and a fully formed emergency procurement strategy.
Yeah, it's a lot of paperwork.
It is, and I have to push back here. If a town is literally underwater, forcing a mayor to sit down and fill out treasury compliance spreadsheets feels incredibly out of touch.
I totally get that.
Like, how does this not just paralyze the entire rescue effort?
Well, it seems entirely counterintuitive to demand paperwork during a fire, I agree. But this raises an important question. What happens when millions of dollars flow into a disaster zone without any oversight?
Oh, yeah. I guess that could go wrong pretty fast.
Exactly. Emergencies breed chaos, and chaos breeds exploitation. These rigid financial controls are actually guided by strict treasury regulations.
Like the MFMA and PFMA laws mentioned in the form.
Yes, those exactly. They dictate exactly how public money is managed and audited. They act as the only flood wall against corruption.
So it guarantees those funds actually reach the ground where they're needed.
Precisely. And the most crucial element of this entire emergency application is that it mandates a detailed plan for achieving a permanent housing solution.
Wait, really? So the state won't give you emergency funds to patch a wound unless you prove how you're going to permanently heal it?
That's exactly it. It's forcing a long-term fix right in the middle of a short-term crisis.
Wow. So what does this all mean for you listening right now? Well, it means the next time you see disaster relief on the news, you'll know the staggering amount of bureaucratic heavy lifting happening behind the scenes.
Right. It's not just helicopters dropping off tents. It is a massive, highly regulated machine.
Yeah. Which leaves you with this final thought. If a temporary emergency application mandates a detailed plan for a permanent fix, does this imply that sudden disasters, ironically, are often the bureaucratic catalyst required to finally resolve long-standing informal settlement issues?
That is a really provocative point.
Yeah, maybe sometimes, just like in a game of SimCity, you know, you can't really build a permanent infrastructure until the map gets wiped clean.